Wait,
Okay,
hang
you
on, let me
know
start it real quick.
what?
Recording in progress.
All right, back on the record, February 27, 2025, 2 o'clock p.m., the Spring Hill preliminary plat applications and SEPA appeal. It doesn't look like we got many of our attendees back. We're in the middle of public testimony, so give people a minute to join up. If you want to say something, click on your virtual hand and we'll make sure you get in there. I see Mr. Lubisher's there. I know he had his hand up before, so I'll assume he wants to comment. So let's bring him up and let him get started.
I pulled over the wrong person. One second.
Okay, Mr. Lubisher, let me swear in. Just raise your right hand. You swear affirm tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Joel Lubisher from Indianola. I have a letter of comments that I have submitted, and I presume, Mr. Examiner, you've seen that at this point or not. So let me start with a few additional comments. What I thought I heard from the applicant was that the buffer doesn't exist without an impact, which I found rather an ascientific comment. I mean, the buffer's there. It's functioning, for better or worse. It does exist. There was also a comment from Ms. Bartlett, I believe, that you're getting more wetlands with the mitigation being a 1.5 to 1 ratio, and there are reasons for requiring increased ratios when you do mitigation, including the likelihood of success and the general effectiveness of a replacement wetland compared to a existing wetland. Number three, the comp plan does have to seek a balance between housing and environment. The environment is, in every survey that's done, Kitsap citizens rate the quality of the environment, quality of the wildlife habitat extremely highly. So you can't make a decision simply on the basis that because it's affordable housing, you can't, that it has to be approved. Fourth, there is a root cause here that's causing a conflict, and that is the incompatibility between our zoning and our critical areas. As Mr. Gurney showed in his one of his initial slides, the county database has no wetlands on those two parcels. Nonetheless, it was zoned at a relatively high density. And as long as we have this disconnect between zoning and critical areas, there is going to be a constant issue to be resolved. In this case, the applicant got this land at a good price because it had a lot of wetlands, but they still want to insist on maximizing their density. And that, it doesn't make sense in terms of the comp plan, where you want to balance your environmental quality with housing. Now, in regard to my written comments, I did not receive any feedback on those from the county, and I have called into question the correctness of the rating of the wetlands. And I cited a specific scoring problem, and I would buttress that with the fact that this wetland specialist has had some problems in the past. And Mr. Examiner, you are on one of those cases, the Dronawood variance, where prior to your taking that seat, the wetland buffer had been substantially underestimated, and the previous examiner confirmed that and required the changes in the report and the analysis. Second one was at Arborwood, where the same specialist stated that a buffer reduction was under the 50% when in fact it was over the fact, and Examiner Marshall confirmed that as well. So I think there is, between my analysis of my reading of the rating paper, between my analysis of the rating sheets and the past history of this applicant, I think a condition requiring the department to call for a third-party review is more than called for, and I would ask that you make that condition. Also, it seems like we've got parking areas right up against buffer boundaries in the design, and my understanding is that you need a setback between impervious surfaces and buffers. And so, again, I don't know if you want to handle that through a condition or some other manner, but I would suggest that question needs to be answered as well. So you have the rest of my comments in a written form. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lovisher. All right, let's bring up Mr. Heister. All right, Mr. Heister, I'll swear you in there. Just raise your right hand. Do you swear affirm to tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
Yes, I do.
Great, go ahead.
So I have submitted a letter of that I call of conditional support, and if you tell me I should just let that stand, that's fine, or I could take a few minutes to summarize my key points.
Oh, I've read it, but you know, anything you want to emphasize is fine.
I think so. My career has been as an energy project developer, renewable energy, and I hear a zillion times what a great idea, just not here. I don't want to be one of those kind of neighbors. I live in Kingston Meadows, just south of this project. I respect the developer's right to try and develop the project according to the laws. But there's no way a project of this scope will not have impacts on us. So I'm hoping that if it goes forward, some problems offsite can actually be corrected. Lindvog is a pedestrian hazard, and with an additional 1,000 trips a day, at some point, a pedestrian or their dogs are going to get struck. We need to fix, as we heard somebody talk about before, pedestrian pathways down to the 104, and even the developer claims that a lot of the people will be working and taking their pedestrian paths. So we gotta do sidewalks. Secondly, in Kingston Meadows, in the rainy season, we get drainage, presumably from the wetlands, which are no longer able to accommodate the load of the rain, and it drips out on Kingston Meadows Road and freezes, and it's quite hazardous. I'm concerned that with the addition of impervious surfaces, even with retention and maybe wetlands mitigation offsite, that we would exacerbate that problem on Kingston Meadows Road. So I would like to see that the hydrological engineering deal with that problem that affects Kingston Meadows. Thirdly, I've heard others talk about this, people are speeding on Lindvog regardless of the digital sign that tells them that they're speeding. And I wrote one comment in there, and one of the county commissioners was kind enough to write back to me and said, well, we can't turn that into an enforcement mechanism, a camera trap, because Washington law only allows that near schools. But I would like to see some effort to address the speeding that's going on Lindvog, which would be exacerbated by this project. And fourth, while I laud the effort to provide teachers and nurses and such that are income constrained from having a homeownership opportunity, I want to make sure that the credit quality of those people is somehow assured, so that the project doesn't degenerate into something that would have negative social impacts on the people who are already here, like Kingston Meadows. So I don't know how that's done, and maybe it's under the existing law, but just because somebody has lower income doesn't mean they're irresponsible people. So we want responsible neighbors. And lastly, I'm concerned about parking. Kingston Meadows has two parking places per resident, and even with that, we're sometimes challenged. So 1.5 parking places per resident, I'm a little concerned about. And unlike maybe West Seattle, where somebody can prospect for a parking place a couple of blocks over, that opportunity doesn't exist at this site. And so if their lot fills up and people have to wander around to find a place to park, I don't know where they're going to go. If they come to Kingston Meadows, I know our board will be very aggressive about keeping them out. But I'm a little concerned about that 1.5 parking places per unit. That pretty well summarizes what I submitted to you in a letter.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Heister. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
All right. Next is Ms. Maxwell.
Hello.
All right, Ms. Maxwell, let me swear you in real quick. Just raise your right hand. You swear affirm to tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
Yes, I do.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Kelly, K-E-L-L-I, Maxwell, M-A-X-W-E-L-L. I'm a resident up off of Linvog. And I think, you know, sitting through the hearing today, I just want to say thank you to everybody that's here. I know that this is probably emotionally charged for a lot of people, and I just appreciate everybody's time and energy spent on this. As a resident of Kingston, gosh, for over 5 years now, with a young family, I think there's a lot of concerns after this development. Just to echo what has been said already multiple times, that Linvog itself and the existing infrastructure cannot handle a development of this size. As the person before me just said, there's no sidewalks. I mean, I don't feel comfortable walking my own kids down into town because of the speeding on Linvog and just the lack of space to push a stroller or anything like that is just not feasible in its current state. So if we add more people to that, it's just only going to get worse. Another thing that stands out to me is the local schools. I think I've been told by multiple friends that have kids at Gordon Elementary that they're already at maximum capacity. And so for those of us who already have kiddos here, you know, and we're trying to bring more families in, where will all of those kiddos go? I think that that's another big issue that's important, that should be important to any family moving into this area. So I think providing 230 more homes sounds great, but if you don't have the infrastructure to support those families, including roads, schools, all of that stuff, it just doesn't really see, it seems like false advertising to me. In addition to ferry traffic that comes through Kingston, I think there's just lots of reasons, in addition to the environmental impacts, that this development as it stands right now just doesn't make sense. And so I guess that's all I've got to say, but thank you again.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Maxwell. All right, next is Corey on our virtual list.
Hello, can you hear me?
All right, Corey, yep, let me swear you in first. Just raise your right hand. Do you swear affirm tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and what's your last name, sir?
Maxwell.
Oh, okay, all right, go ahead.
Yeah, you just heard from my wife. She's a little bit more well-spoken than I am. Yeah, so we are a resident of Kingston. We actually live directly across the street from the proposed site. It seems like the lawyers are more passionate about cutting corners and padding their profits than they are about anything. Everything I heard the gentleman say was about reducing this, reducing that, making excuses of why they hadn't felt they had the authority to fill in a wetland. If an average citizen was attempting to do that and didn't have a multitude of lawyers behind them, I feel like I would have the county here in a heartbeat. And 272nd is the border of city limits. 272nd, both sides of Linvog, is not maintained by the county. I maintain the current lower section of 272nd. I have 5 acres right there. The neighbor up from me has 5 acres. The neighbor up on my side of the road has 2.5 acres. We all have an agreement to take care of and maintain such such of the road to keep it well maintained. As of right now, there is zero parking available on Lindvog. And if the applicant is granted a, I heard his attorney say that the governor had pushed through that they were able to possibly reduce their parking, the number one spot that they are going to look is my front yard. And that is going to be a financial burden on me, and not only including the garbage that could be thrown, but all the increased traffic that would be involved there. I don't feel that that would be fair to me, nor the additional residents that border this, with zero infrastructure being proposed to supplement any of this. The 1.5 parking spots per unit for 233 units or 230 units is the absolute bare minimum. I don't know any first-time homeowners, not many of them, as single or multiple family dwellings, but one family living in them, where a mother and father in this modern time are not working. That would be at least half a car. There's two cars right there, and they're over the parking budget. And anybody that has anybody come over and attempt to come see these places, like the gentleman before me said, you are not going down city blocks to try and find parking in an apartment building. You are coming directly across the street with zero off margins. And so you're going to have normal residents coming up the road, possibly hitting these vehicles. And again, with my wife talking about Gordon Elementary, it is the only local school outside of Wolfley Elementary that is outside of town. They are at max capacity right now for their K-6 program. First through third grade is at a capacity of 27 to 30 students per teacher. And with an additional 230 units, where without the additional infrastructure of another school projected in the Jefferson Beach or Indianola area to try and have a pressure relief valve for that, does not seem smart. I am also an officer with the Washington State Ferries, and the increased amount of traffic coming through town and then the lack of law enforcement, as another woman had spoke to earlier, we are unincorporated. We had two sheriffs that monitored the entire North Kitsap region, and they are no longer there. The only actual police patrol that we get is when Washington State Patrol shows up to the Kingston dock at 8 a.m, and then they leave at 4 o'clock. But their number one concern is serving the Washington State Ferries. They do not report to other instances. So for the complete lack of law enforcement, and I dumped my entire life savings to live here for to come back to Kitsap County. I've been in and out of Kitsap County, specifically Kingston, for 20 years. And the people that are moving here come here for the trees. They come for, I wanted to give my kids a childhood that I remembered. And to mow down all of these parcels to attempt to put in what would be essentially project authority housing, which I grew up in. I grew up in low-income housing. And as a great idea as it is, I understand for these programs. But like the other gentleman said, I don't want to be the one that says not here. But you don't want to border on rural communities. That was one of the number one things. But you're backing up to one right now. And for the cost burden to maintaining roads, the hazard of children coming down into town without any additional infrastructure talked about, unless there's amenities, if somehow this gets pushed through, the applicant, I feel there should be a town meeting of some kind of mass improvements to Lindvog that would help out the existing community. So thank everybody for their time and putting effort and energy into this. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Maxwell. All right. Anybody else in the virtual? It looks like the this last chance to speak on this. Like I said, I am leaving the record open tomorrow until 5 for written comment, but no takers there. Miss Jones, final check in the meeting room. Anyone in the meeting room want to say anything?
No.
Nope. Okay. Let's. We're going to go back to Mr. Gurney then to clean some stuff up. And also, I had asked Miss Nichols about that Superior Court decision, if she has a moment after Mr. Gurney is done to address the county position on that decision. So, Mr. Gurney, any comments?
He's getting his camera on.
Okay.
Yeah, hit the wrong button. My apologies. So, I guess, can you restate the question that you have right now?
I had a question of Ms. Nichols, and I thought she could answer it after you're done with whatever you wanted to address at this point.
Oh, so I can address some comments that came in?
Yeah.
Okay. what, let me see if I can find my...
Yeah, this is just the staff rebuttal portion of the plenary. Yeah, so, okay. I mean, you don't have to say anything, but if you want.
No, I do have some points of clarification. Yeah. So just have to find the correct page of notes that I was looking at, because I write them everywhere. So I guess I'll take this in, try to do it in a linear fashion, so and by topic. So I'd like to address the parking, for one. The avoidance measures that we're talking about, and the calculation of density, and just clarify the use of net developable area. So I'll go with parking. The claim that this should be a townhouse project, the project actually meets the definition of single-family attached. The project narrative also explains these as single-family attached dwelling units. They are explicitly called out in our use table. Or single-family attached are explicitly called out in our use table because of the use is slightly different than that of just a general townhome development. Whether I agree with that or not, I definitely understand the use of the word townhome is vague, and we don't have a definition for that in our code. But single-family attached housing, if you have one large structure with 8 units, as an example, when we add parcel lines underneath those structures and they can be sold off individually, that is what we classify as single family attached dwellings. They can be sold separately. That is what we have in our allowed use table as a categorical use. The performance-based development is what allows this to occur by reducing the setbacks down to 0. And it is explicitly called out in our parking tables. We, in the past, our interpretations of code did not allow for, or there's the cell itself in the parking tables did not allow garages to count towards the requirements of number of spots provided. Given current state legislation, it allows garages to count towards that requirement. Thus, we are allowing that in this permit and future permits. So that's where you'll see that the county does recognize that there are 230 spaces in the garage. The calculation of the parking requirement is based on that categorical use, single family attached, which this meets. So the parking reduction requested is the equivalent of 40%. The electric vehicle and bicycle portions of our code, that allows for an administrative reduction regardless of what the director feels is appropriate. It allows you to reduce it up to 25% total between those two elements. So if you have the combination of different elements of EV parking and bicycle, you can get up to 25%, but that is the maximum. So you can't get 50% reduction by including both, all elements of both. The further reduction beyond 25% would require a separate variance permit. It's a zoning variance that we would have to review against the zoning variance criteria, one of which being you need the minimum relief necessary and it can't be a self-inflicted situation But parking, we generally have a little bit more leeway. You do have the the transit location provided on site. You have the suggested provision of sidewalks down to Bond Road. So just as a point of clarification on those. When we get to the avoidance and the critical areas, county interpretation is that the 19200, you identify your critical areas, you have these existing critical areas, that is prior to going to the mitigation. If we go directly to mitigation measures, that essentially is saying that anyone can fill a wetland and compensate for it in any other location at certain ratios. Therefore, you can fill any wetland of any significance because it's skipping the variance section. So I will stand behind that we need a critical area variance. If the critical area variance process yields an approval for the project as designed, then we could move forward with this project and recommend approval. But we need that variance to do so. That is the process and the mechanism by which we analyze those impacts. One thing that I would like to point out for the discussion around steep slopes and the ability to build on those slopes, we have multiple locations in Kingston, actually, that they have built on slopes similar to the ones that are depicted on the site plan here that show recreational area. Immediately south in the Kingston Meadows, you have Kingston Village down by the Barber Cutoff Road. You have higher density housing that's built within those areas. We have projects across the county that have sewer lift stations, retaining walls to make sure that they can develop. The geotechnical report identifies the site as being developable and that there's no hazards. Yet, at the same time, it's also being used as we can't develop on the slopes, therefore we get to fill the wetlands. So in our review, that is a point of conflict. And all this being said, it's this is not a case, even it may appear that we have a certain opinion about the project. That is not the case. We are reviewing, as I said, we review against the code, and we do not provide recommendations based on our opinions. It is a fact-based system that we review. So I think that's most of the things I wanted to address. I guess if there's any further questions about that, I can get into those. But I think for right now that covers most of what I had to say.
Okay, great. Thanks, Mr. Gurney. All right. So, Ms. Nichols, I was asking about the Judge Forbes decision, whether that applies to this case. And if it does, if I'm bound by it. So I was curious about your opinion on that.
So, Lisa Nichols, for the record, I don't believe that the decision actually says what the applicants think it says. I don't believe it says that you're good to go if you mitigate. I understood the decision to be more that the hearing examiner seemed to think in that case that filling wasn't good enough and the mitigation sequencing or mitigation that they did could never be good enough. But that's not what we have here. We have that the wetlands potentially maybe could be filled, but we haven't seen the evidence that they've sufficiently avoided the impacts. And you have to go through that process to be able to determine if you can fill the wetlands.
Okay. And, it's just, I guess I haven't had a contested wetland filling before. It's usually a done deal by the time it gets to me. Everyone is in agreement on how to do it. So I was a little curious, Mr. Gurney, I think in response to one of my questions, he was saying, like, the YMCA case, for example, where, if the Army Corps approves a filling, do they still need to comply to the county's code to get a variance for that filling the wetland as well? Or how's that handled by the county usually, you know?
I haven't processed that personally, but from my understanding and discussions with our current planning team, it still requires the variance process, but it provides that as a piece of the justification that allows the variance to be approved.
Okay. Ms. Nichols, so, do you have anything to add to that?
No, that's what I was going to say, too. It's part of the analysis.
Okay. So as far as you know, the variance has always been required for any filling of a wetland, then?
I would assume it's very rare that we actually get a filled wetland.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't speak in examples, but.
Okay.
I did have one more point I would like to bring up.
Sure.
So I had it in my notes. I finally found it. But when we talk about a practicable alternatives, that is something where, when we're looking at alternatives, I mentioned it. We look from the minimum requirements. We look outward and up as to how much intensity can you include and still meet code. So one of the things that I said as well is that we can't design a project, but we can provide input as to what might be more amenable to code and compliant with code. So in this situation, if you had roads that responded to the topography, you have the large open space that's in the central portion of the property, that open space gets reduced. You have structures and road put up into that space. The open space then comes into the buffers. That's an alternative that can be explored. Using the buffers only, you have a wetland that's on the east side that the buffers have not been encroached to at all, yet there's development proposed to fill the wetlands to the south without looking at possibly balancing between the two buffers. Those different alternatives have yet to be explored. And so that's the kind of alternatives analysis that we look for. And to respond to the comment of, we wouldn't be able to build on the property, the situation where we get into buffer averaging, administrative reductions, if you have a very fragmented wetland pattern and you have pockets around the entire site that all add up to, let's say, 10 acres, and you're required by code at 10 units per acre to build 100 units. But because of that fragmented pattern, you can't really build those 100 units. That's when we get into you can average, you can do administrative reductions, the variances to be able to build those products because that's required by code. So that's a scenario that we would look at that as a validating element. But we would still require that critical area variance to allow that to happen.
Okay.
That is all I have. So.
Okay, great. Thanks, Mr. Green. All right, applicants, final word on the plat portion of the hearing. Any comments you want to make before we jump into the SEPA portion?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Hearing Examiner. A couple things. So, number one, the open air parking space.
Oh, and sir, if you could identify yourself for
the
record, I can't tell by your voice.
Oh, y'all knew each other.
Yeah.
No, sorry, Hayes Gorey.
Okay, thanks, Mr.
Yes.
Gorey.
Oh, that's right. You're not. Oh, I could turn my video too, I suppose. Liliana is telling me to do that.
Oh, okay. There you go.
There I am. Okay.
You have to do what she tells you. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Right. So, the open air parking spaces will be pervious. Will be pervious. Okay, and the county's been advised of that as long ago as June of last year. So there's no setbacks when the parking spaces are pervious. And Mr. Lubisher referenced that, so I just wanted to make that clear. Appreciate his attention to detail. And a lot of the folks in the community are concerned about Lynn Vog and lack of sidewalk and speeding, and so are we. And we met with the Kingston Meadows HOA and some of the Maples folks showed up as well. We had a nice conversation, and that was the biggest thing that came out was we need a sidewalk from your project down to 104. And so as part of our engagement with the commissioners, which has gone nowhere because of the wetland issues and what they're being told by DCD, We have offered to pay up to $115,000 on top of our $600,000 traffic impact fees towards construction of a sidewalk. So we are trying to help be part of the solution and not part of the problem. And I do want to make it clear there's a lot of comments about the environment, but our wetland experts both say that there's going to be a functional lift of ecological functioning. Okay, so that's in the record. That's what they're going to testify during the CEPA appeal. So I know people get upset about things, but they're the experts, and they say functional lift, improvement, right? The absolute opposite of adverse environmental impacts. That's not me. That's the experts. A couple things. Mr. Lubisher recommended a third-party review. Well, we have two wetland experts. There's one review. There's two reviews. Then there's the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers doing the A to Z, soup to nuts review, everything, delineation, categorization, avoidance, minimization, impact, mitigation plan, et cetera, with wetland biologists, multiple experts on their team, been to the site multiple times, a ton of interaction with them. There's another third-party review. Department of Ecology is working hand in glove with the Army Corps of Engineers. Okay, there you go. They have experts on staff. Neil Molstad is the project lead for us. He is a wetland expert, and he's very detail-oriented, and he has raked us over the coals on a lot of things, appropriately so, and it's made everything better, and it's protected the environment better. Okay? So there's another third-party review. So, Mr. Examiner, I'm worried about what's going on. Mr. Gurney is not a wetland specialist. He's not even a CEPA-responsible official. He's a project planner. With all due respect, that's a fantastic thing, but I'm not a wetland expert either. So so to rely on him about all this wetland stuff and how it's done, you're going to hear from Robin Meyer, our wetland expert. We've already heard from the Corps and from ecology, and ecology makes up the rules that everybody follows, and they're perfectly fine with what we've done with the sequencing and how that leads to impacts. That's how it's done. I don't know what else to say. And that leads into the City of Poulsbo decision. Judge Forbes got it absolutely right. And it's not as though this is the Wild West, as maybe some folks are implying. You can, ride in and you do a little avoidance, do a little minimization, and just start filling wetlands. It's absolutely not the case. There's a tremendous amount of oversight, all the more so, whereas here we have to get a nationwide permit. I mean, holy cow. We've been working on this for about a year and a half with the Corps and Ecology and Fish and Wildlife and Suquamish Tribe, et cetera, and R2 wetland experts. And I mean, this is not done lightly. Okay, so we're on the cusp of getting that nationwide permit, but we cannot get that permit until the county finishes its CEPA review. So it's just a catch-22 for Mr. Gurney to say, well, we need that Corps permit before we can, evaluate this through the variance or whatever they're saying. Then the project's dead in the water. I mean, it's just nonsensical. So I have advised the county of that. And that's a theme throughout here. And you see it in my emails, the October 3rd email in particular. I'm like, as if they don't listen to anything we say. Any conversations that we've had, this stuff doesn't appear in the staff report. We thought we had multifamily agreed upon for parking, when all of a sudden they're backtracking. It's single family, even though it says townhouse explicitly in the code to try to defeat the project. And then we had the fire access all squared away, and all of a sudden now they're saying, well, first of all, they just got the standard wrong, saying that you need two entrances. We don't, because of the ADTs. But I mean, we thought we had that all ironed out, and all of a sudden it's just off the table. I just get an exhibit from the engineer that we've never seen before, dated January 28th. I've never seen that. I mean, it's just one thing after another where they're just targeting this project. I don't know how else to say it, and I'm not a paranoid person, but I don't know what else to say. So I just encourage you, Mr. Examiner, listen to the experts that you hear from today, the experts that are in the record, and it's nobody on the county side. It's nobody on the county side. Now, the City of Poulsbo case, that is directly on point. The City of Poulsbo said, we're not going to allow you to impact through the sequencing process, impact and mitigate. They just denied the sequencing process. Whatever the reason, it was the same thing. We don't accept that you can do this via sequencing. And we had to sue, and Judge Forbes said no. I'll give you the citation. I think this might be helpful to you. I looked it up on the break. It's Paulsbo Municipal Code 16.20.240, wetland alterations. And it reads identical in terms of the sequencing process: avoid, minimize, rectify the impact, reduce or eliminate, you know, by way of mitigation. And there's a reference to WAC 197.11.768. You click on that, that's the Department of Ecology definition of mitigation, which is, you know, avoid, minimize, mitigate, and so on. I mean, this is how it's done. It's standard. It's well accepted by everyone. That's what Ms. Myers was trying to tell you before the break. This is how it's done in every jurisdiction. If the county's the outlier. The county's the outlier. I mean, Ms. Myers will say that. It's like an offer of proof. Take it as that. So there's that. So let's see. Let me finish with that. So let's talk about parking and the slopes. So their position on parking and their position on building on the western slopes, those are both very distinctly anti-environmental positions they're taking. They want us to create hundreds of more parking spaces, which are way more than is needed, okay? But yet they're having a conniption about us following the mitigation sequencing process, right, and following the law in that regard. So it's just inconsistent. And then building on the slopes on the west, the slopes are critical areas. There's a memo from Mr. Nason that you know he testified earlier. It's F-26, Exhibit F-26. We asked him to analyze the feasibility of building on those slopes because the county had mentioned it in their request for information that they issued in January of 2024. And he put out a memo, I think it was in May of 2024, just saying, no, it's not feasible for various reasons. And to my point that the county ignores what we submit, it's as if Mr. Nason's expert opinion not matter. I mean, it's just, I don't understand. Like I said, I've never seen anything this egregious in terms of disregarding expertise, disregarding code, disregarding practice. I don't understand what's going on. The only way it makes sense, that I can make sense of it, is where I started. Mr. Diener, who's the CEPA responsible official, back in July of 2022 said, you can't impact wetlands as a subdivision, period, full stop. It's a void, full stop. Go elsewhere. We run other people off the property. You know, you better think twice. He tried to warn us off. Well, we don't accept that. We follow the law. Okay, and then Mr. Gurney looks at us across the table in September of 2023 and says, a month after we've submitted our application, review's just starting, he says, I recommend denial. You didn't avoid impacts. We don't have to wonder what's going on. So it's very disingenuous. The fact that Mr. Gurney has to say, you know, there's no bias here. We follow the law. Why does he have to say that? Because the evidence indicates otherwise. I wish it weren't so. I wish we were all singing kumbaya and on the same page here, as you indicate. You know, for wetland impacts, typically that's the case. Why is that? Ask yourself, why is that not the case? There's something odd going on here. Think about the December 2023 notice where they say, we've looked at everything, and this looks good. We're going to issue a DNS, right? Everything's good. Sequencing, impact, mitigation, perfect. Environmental impact, no problem. And then all of a sudden, they turn tail. And all of a sudden, this critical area variance pops up. Never heard about it before, right? That's not fair. That's a violation of due process. They have an obligation to tell us what we need to do to submit a complete application. I mean, this is lawlessness. I don't know how else to say it. I hope you don't think I'm being hysterical, but I've lived this for 2.5 years. If anything, I'm an understater kind of person, but this is unbelievable. And then, as I mentioned before the break, everything only got better from an environmental standpoint from December 2023 going forward, right? We reduced our impact. We improved the mitigation. We added Robin Myers as a second wetland specialist. We got everything squared away with the Corps and Ecology. Ecology is the boss of all of this, right? The county is only the deputy as the lead agency for CEPA. Everybody follows Ecology. Ecology says this looks good to us. Avoidance, minimization, impact, good. Perimeter buffers are appropriate. I mean, there should be no dispute here. I don't even know what we're talking about, honestly. But I know we have to because the county's trying to, I don't know, they're trying to stop the project because they don't want us to impact wetlands. I don't know how else to say it. And so when you look at that PMC 16.20.240, and then you look at Judge Forbes' decision, she's looking at the exact same sequencing that you're looking at, Mr. Examiner. And she's saying, yes, you can go through the sequencing process and you can impact and mitigate, right? It says, all, it, just like the Kitsap Code, it says all impacts to wetlands or buffers shall be done as follows. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about impacts and filling. This, I don't know. That's all I have.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Gorey. All right. I guess at this point, we can move on to the SEPA portion of the hearing. And I take it just to double check, Ms. Jones, is that consistent with the notice? We didn't have a separate time for the SEPA or no?
Okay, no, yeah, just rolled right into whenever.
Nice. Okay. All right. Yeah. And I will say, actually, I mean, you know, the pre-hearing order set this up as consolidated. We weren't mandated to make it consolidated. The DS appeals can be held separately, but nobody objects to doing it that way, and there isn't much harm in doing it that way. So, but bear in mind, then, the evidence that's already been presented is, you know, all the right, since this is a consolidated hearing, all of the evidence can be considered when addressing the SEPA issues. And so you don't need to repeat yourself, you know, on things and arguments that were made before. So from what I recall, I think the order of presentation was going to be appellants first, then the county second, and the appellant's exhibits have all been admitted into the record already. So I guess, Mr. Gorey, we can just jump right into it at this point if you want.
Let me turn my video on before Liliana tells me. Okay, so now we're into the SEPA appeal.
Right.
Okay. Well, I don't think I need to make an opening statement. I think we know what we're talking about. So we'll call Robin Myers as the first witness.
Okay. And just for timing, I usually do a 15-minute break every 90 minutes, so we'll go on until about 3:30 in Asheville Point, you know, stopping point in the testimony, and take a break at that time. So let's bring up Ms. Myers.
She's in the room with us. So.
Okay.
Yeah, she's sitting right next to me.
Okay. Ms. Myers is part of the same hearing, so we'll say you're still sworn in. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Okay. Ms. Myers, move this along. Wait, what's your profession?
I'm a wetland biologist. I'm a senior professional wetland scientist, certified. I have my own business, BGE Environmental. I've been in business for about 17 years, doing just generally this vicinity, Western Washington, helping primarily residential, commercial and larger residential plats and things like that. Prior to being a private consultant, I worked for Kitsap County Department of Community Development, where I did basically permit review, and I was the biologist expert for their residential, commercial, and plat review. I had a run at CEPA official. I was a key staff at the 2005 critical area ordinance update.
Okay, could you talk about your education?
My education, I am a graduate of Florida Tech with a bachelor's in biological oceanography and a master's in environmental science.
Okay, and just quickly, your experience as a private wetlands consultant in Kitsap County?
A grand old mix of residential to commercial, larger plats. I ran around doing cell towers for a while. Just anything at or near wetland streams, shorelines, generally need some sort of review. So.
Okay. And you're on the list, the Kitsap County DCD list of qualified wetland specialists, is that right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, that's exhibits B67 and B68. Record. Okay, so we brought you on in January, is that correct?
Yes.
And why did you join our team?
There were some discussions or deeper discussions on the wetland A rating that Joanne was having with Army Corps of Engineers and Ecology, and she wanted an independent rating on that wetland, so she asked me to do that and see what my answer was so that we could take a look and have a larger discussion with Army Corps and Ecology.
Okay, and when you came on board, did you review all of Joanne's work to date?
At that time? Mm-hmm. No, I really just rated the wetland.
Okay, but has your role expanded over time?
It has, yeah. Okay. Yes.
And have you reviewed Joanne's work in all respects, from delineation to mitigation?
I have, yes.
Okay, and going back to her April 2013 initial critical errors report and her mitigation plan?
I have.
Okay, do you have any disagreement with anything that Joanne has done, any of her conclusions or anything?
No.
Okay. Have you worked with Joanne before?
I have, for years.
Just to cut to the chase just for a second. So we've been talking a lot about is it permissible to impact and fill wetlands using the mitigation sequencing process alone? It's Kitsap County Code 19-200-230. Is it in your experience?
It is, and it's funny that you bring that up. I was just kind of texting with Joanne. She actually kind of can't be here, and I asked her if she could give me a list of any projects she has worked with or she remembers working with in Kitsap County that actually went directly to mitigation and fill. And if I could share those with you, I would love to.
You can read
the trails in Silverdale, YMCA in Silverdale, Randall Road in Silverdale, which hosts Navy Federal, a senior living center, a self-storage facility, the Oak Table Restaurant, and a few more. I think a Montessori school as well. The Blue Heron neighborhood, Hidden Hills, Woodbridge neighborhood, the corner of John Carlson in Bremerton, Walmart Bremerton, Port Orchard Bremerton, West Kingston Road Rite Aid, Sinclair Ridge, the corner of Buckland Hill and Mickleberry Road, AMPM at John Carlson Road. There's plenty of actions in Driftwood Keys, single family residences, driveways. There's been the Key Club or the whatever, the community center up there, Kitsap Mall. There's tons of right-of-way projects that were done by Kitsap County. Kingston Meadows, who is the neighbor south of this project. And I think that sums it up.
Okay, so these are situations, just to be clear, where wetlands were impacted and filled using the mitigation sequencing process alone?
Correct.
No critical areas variance required?
None that I worked on, and I can't speak for Joanne, but I could be pretty confident that did not occur.
So is the county an outlier in saying that we need a critical areas variance to use the mitigation sequencing process to impact and fill wetlands?
Absolutely.
All right. I do want to – let's do this. I'm trying to cut to the chase here to expedite. We've covered a lot of this, so if you'll bear with me. how about just – so looking at Kitsap County Code 200-230 – mitigation sequencing process. Can you just a general description for our education? How's that supposed to work? And how does it go? How does it play out over time in a given project?
Well, from start to finish, I mean, you're on the ground. You do your assessment, and you get your maps, and you provide your buffers, and you give that direction, the starts, your standards, and you give that to your client and say, okay, here's your hard stops. And the client already has basically what they're looking at as far as like densities and what the project is, zoning, what they can fit in there, and looking at all other codes like fire and storm and that type of thing. So they take brushes at everything, and they're like, and then they keep coming back with stuff, and they'll say, okay, this is what we need. And so it's kind of a nip and a tuck if you need it, or some moving some things. So there's a lot of back and forth, trying to make things fit. And it's not just environmental and the client. There's engineers, right? There's architects. Everybody, there's a huge team working on taking their bit and piece of that net developable area. And eventually you get to a point where you're at where we are today. And it isn't always wetland fill, right? Sometimes you have a buffer reduction and you're in front of getting a variance. It all just depends on what the project is. And what the lay of the land looks like.
That's buffer reduction variance, not a fill.
Correct.
Okay, those are different things.
Absolutely different.
Okay. In this project, are we talking about buffer reduction?
No.
Okay. Only wetland fill for the mitigation sequence.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. So you do the avoidance, and is the purpose of the project relevant in terms of the avoidance and minimization, or do you have to just go down to minimum density?
No, the purpose of the project really has no relevance to the environmental.
Well, in terms of the developers,
the applicant's avoidance. Doesn't it matter the project that they wish to build in terms of whether they can fit it within the developable area and totally avoid impacts?
If they can totally avoid, they'll totally avoid.
Right. Yes. But like in this case, we want to build a 230-unit affordable housing project. We cannot fit it within, we cannot totally avoid impacts. Do you agree?
Agree.
Okay. So given that, is it incumbent upon us to shrink our project? Or can we stick with the project that we want to build and go through the mitigation sequencing process?
It makes better sense to go through the mitigation sequencing process.
Why do you say that?
Mostly because the way the wetlands kind of sit on the property, they're kind of finger out. So it makes it very difficult to actually have some sort of real good, I'm not a designer or anything like that, but it's smarter to make your designs work, you know, it's more linear, and it's easier just to take off those fingers and make things fit better for that. If okay. That makes sense, I think I'm just kind of
That makes sense. Let's call up the, let me find the best way to, the best exhibit here. Okay, how about, let's go. Liliana, can I bug you? How about exhibit F53, page 4?
Give me 1 second.
Sure, thank you. And I'll represent that this is a September 23rd, 2024 letter that Ms. Myers and Ms. Bartlett jointly authored and was sent to the county explaining a number of things. We'll go through it, but attached to it is the latest impact overview. There it is. and so, Ms. Myers, could you explain here, you know, where it is that we are filling wetlands?
Is it orange? I think the orange little fingers that stick up out there.
Okay.
Is the filled wetland?
So those are kind of the orange, and then also wetland B on the right, is that orange as well?
Yes, it is.
In the southeast corner?
Yes.
Okay, so that's the result of the mitigation sequencing, is that those wetlands will be filled, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, and then after the wetlands are filled, then is that when you have to do your mitigation?
Yes.
Okay, and then what type of mitigation is being done? This project?
Wetland creation.
Okay. Does the wetland creation meet the required ratios under Kitsap County Code?
Yes.
Okay. Is there any enhancement?
I don't remember. I think there's some enhancement along the buffer.
Okay. Okay. All right. And then if we could jump over to exhibit B55. Page 11, and I'll represent that this is the latest and greatest iteration of the mitigation plan. Is it unusual for mitigation plans for a project to go through iterations?
Oh, no, not unusual at all.
Okay. And, yeah, so is that page 11? Maybe just keep going, sorry. There's a mitigation plan there. Just keep scrolling. Blue and yellow. Okay, yeah, so that's the exhibit we're talking about. And 11. Hold on. Is this? No, I'm sorry. B 55. I'm sorry. Yeah, Bravo. Bravo 55. Page 11. There it is. Yeah, that one. Okay. So you recognize that as the mitigation plan?
I do.
Is that you're enjoying Sandy work?
Yeah.
Okay. So now I note that the wetlands that are filled are gone. Is that right?
Yeah.
So they've been filled and rendered upland. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then now with the development in place, now
now you have to draw in the 50-foot buffers, is that right?
Correct.
Okay, and are these 50-foot buffers adequate? Does this meet the code?
It does.
Okay, and is it the blue area? Is that the buffers?
Yes, it is.
All right, and then I see some hatched area, kind of almost pinkish in color in between the blues.
Yes.
Is that buffer?
It is buffer.
Why does it look different on your mitigation plan? Is it indirect impacts?
It's the indirect impact.
Okay, and what do you mean by indirect impacts?
It's actually wetland, the existing wetland that we use for the buffer, because when you don't fill a wetland to make a buffer, rather you accept the fact that your wetland will act as a buffer, and then you mitigate it as an indirect impact at a ratio of, in this case, it's 0.75.
Okay. So the hatched pink area is just a continuation of the blue area that it's connected to.
Yes.
And it's buffered just the same as the blue.
It is.
Okay. But because since it is existing wetland, that wetland's kind of being, you know, degraded a little bit, and so you have to mitigate for the wetland serving as buffer.
Yes.
And that's been done.
Yes.
Okay. And that is that a generally accepted practice to use existing buffer as wetland?
Yes.
Is it part of the avoidance, actually?
Yeah. Well, yes, because there's a wall. That's part of the, you know, you stop, and then that's where your impacts stop.
Okay. All right. I think you might have said that. Would it be permissible to fill the wetland just to create a buffer?
No.
Okay. That would be a negative environmental impact.
Yes.
All right. All right, how about the kind of, I don't know, greenish color, the bright neon green color?
That's wetland creation.
Okay, so that's uplands that's being turned into wetlands to mitigate for the impacts?
Yep.
Okay, all right, and so the mitigation that we're looking here, that obviously covers the impact of the wetlands, right?
Mm-hmm.
And is there also enough mitigation to cover impacts to the, you know, those illustrative buffers that were around the filled wetlands?
Yeah.
So it gets covered every which way?
Everything is mitigated on site, yes.
Okay. And then was there, what about wetland B, the small one in the southeast corner?
Wetland B, we mitigated for its area. We didn't need to mitigate for any buffer because under Kitsap's code, it's exempt from buffers. And core doesn't, they don't need buffers either on that.
So. Okay. So you didn't have to account for that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. We could if we needed to, but we didn't.
Okay. And so as a result of this mitigation plan, does this constitute a no net loss of ecological functioning?
No net loss of function and area, which is the requirement at the federal level.
So this meets the federal ecology and the Kitsap County requirements.
That it does.
Okay. And then is this mitigation plan actually going to result in a functional lift for the property?
Yes.
And what does that mean?
It means that you've taken some sort of element that can use some sort of improvement. In this case, we've got some forested issues, like it's more deciduous, so we've got adding some different trees. And then some hydrology help in there with the wetlands, because it is a sloped wetland, so it's a little bit of a challenging, but it's got some great function in it.
And it looks like the project's not touching that wetland in the northwest corner. Is that wetland C?
Yeah.
Are there any impacts on that at all?
No.
And is the project impacting the streams at all, the two streams?
No.
Okay. All right, and all of this done through the mitigation sequencing process under 19200230.
It is.
Without a variance.
Right.
Okay. And this notion of having to get a variance for the sequencing process, when was the first time you ever heard of that?
When Joanne told me that the Kitsap County was requesting a variance for this project.
For this project?
For this project.
After how many years of being a wetland specialist?
25 or plus.
Mr. Hearing Examiner, any questions before we leave this exhibit? All right, and I want to, if we could, only want to jump back to F53. So yeah, Foxtrot 53.
Second.
Ah, perfect. Okay. So this is the letter I referenced earlier. So, Robin, this is your September 23rd, 2024 joint letter with you and Joanne drafted, sent to Mr. Gurney and also David Lynam, who was the acting director of DCD at the time. Yes. Okay. And so why was this letter prepared? What was the motivation for it?
It was in regard to the variance request, basically saying that it was just so out of line with the process, and we were questioning why we were doing it. Just was not anything that we understood. It was so confusing to us that we didn't really understand. So we directed the process that we knew it, and reiterated that our mitigation followed the avoidance and minimization. You know, just restated that we were following the code, already had a mitigation plan, and the variance wasn't needed.
Okay. In fact, if you could, Lana, scroll down a little bit. Keep going, sorry, to the last page of the text. Yeah, just the last one there. Okay, yeah. Say, in fact, your closing sentence is, the only deviation from county code here is the county's request for a critical areas variance, correct?
Yeah.
Stand by that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And then also in this letter, if you could just go to the previous page, Liliana, you spend a fair amount of time discussing those indirect impacts. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it looks like you're explaining how you're using existing wetland as buffer and how that's been referenced throughout the project in the initial mitigation plan going back to April 2013 and then going forward. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then it looks like you cite two different manuals. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what are these manuals that you're citing?
It's the guidance from ecology for how to develop mitigation plans. And I believe one is, I can't read it.
Yeah, can you blow that up maybe? Sorry. Okay, that's great. Okay, yeah, perfect. And then maybe scroll up a little bit. I'm sorry, down. Yeah, a little bit more. Says Washington State Department of Ecology, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Seattle District, and U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, Region 10, March 2006, Wetland Mitigation, Washington State, Part 1, Agency Policies and Guidance, Version 1. Is that a respected and utilized manual?
Yeah, that's just how they tell us how to mitigate for direct impacts.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And there looks like three authors,
mm-hmm.
State Ecology,
mm-hmm.
Federal Army Corps, and Federal EPA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then there's another Washington State Department of Ecology publication. Is that another one that you're referring to?
Yeah.
06-06-011 Alpha. Is that another respected?
Right.
Okay. And then if you could scroll up just a little bit, just a touch. Perfect. And then so reading this letter here, okay, says in cases where the area for an upland buffer is limited or non-existent, wetland area on the edge of the compensation wetland can be considered a buffer for the rest of the compensatory wetland. Correct? And then it says it is not acceptable to fill wetlands to create an upland buffer for the wetland. Right? And this is sometimes called paper fill, is that right? Or paper buffer?
Yeah, that's how I learned it.
And why is it called that?
Because it was a summary of impacts. It wasn't really an action because you're basically making sure that you mitigated properly, but there wasn't really anything that happened on the ground.
You're not really impacting this wetland that's serving as buffer. You're just kind of designating it as buffer.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Okay. All right, and if you could scroll up or down. Perfect. And then just next page here, so I'm reading section 6C.1 of the manual, that the perimeter buffer could be wetland, upland, or a combination of both. In other words, the perimeter buffer does not need to be upland. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And under no circumstances is it acceptable to fill wetlands to establish an upland buffer. Correct?
Correct.
Okay, so this is why you and Joanne, you know, favored the indirect impacts to comply with these manuals.
Right.
In terms of doing mitigation, are there any options here to do off-site mitigation? Like a mitigation bank or in lieu fee or anything like that?
No, not in Keysight.
So all the mitigation for this project is on-site?
It is.
Is that preferred to doing off-site?
Absolutely.
And why?
Just because the impact is in the same area. So you want to keep any, just want to mitigate in the same area, preferably.
I'm curious, Mr. the examiner might be as well. How does the county code relate to the Department of Ecology guidance with respect to wetlands? And is there communication between the two, or updates, or who follows whom? How does that work?
The Growth Management Act requires that the updates, critical area ordinances, get updated every so often, every 5 years or whatever, and then Ecology develops the guidance. And they use the guidances like that developed with CORE and whatever. So there's white papers and science is reviewed, and they develop language for municipalities and counties to review and adopt. And they pick an alternative, and basically they follow that. Everything's under basically what Ecology prefers, like how we rate our wetlands is under an Ecology methodology. The buffers are generally, they're developed, they're alternatives for those buffer widths, and generally every county adopts those with very minor adjustments. So that's really the association.
Okay, and to your knowledge, the county just adopts the Ecology guidance, is that how it works?
Mostly, yeah.
Okay, I've said this a lot. I'm just a lawyer, so I need you to say it, if it's true. You're aware that the site plan was revised in early 2024, right? We dropped 53 units and so on. And what was the result of that in terms of impacts and mitigation, that revision of the site plan?
Well, I don't remember numbers, but I know
just generally.
Yeah, you reduced some of the impacts. I know, but I don't remember the numbers.
Okay, so reduced impacts. Mm-hmm. And did that create any – did it improve the – mitigation plan at all? Did it create any more space or
absolutely, yeah.
Could you speak to that?
I don't remember the specific details of it. I was a secondhand man on it, but yeah,
okay,
I remember
okay.
It getting better.
But the mitigation plan improved as a result of the revision of the site plan?
Definitely, yeah.
Okay. All right.
And I'll elaborate on that because we reduced the amount of impacts. So yes, that's the bonus on that, yeah.
Okay, and this project, from the get-go, because you've reviewed everything, it's always proposed to impact through mitigation sequencing. It's always been the case, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is that a yes?
Yes.
Okay, and then it's always had 50-foot buffers.
Yes.
Correct. Okay, with no buffer averaging or no buffer reductions.
Right.
Okay, and it's always had those indirect impacts with wetlands serving as buffers for a portion of the buffer.
Yeah.
That hasn't changed throughout.
No.
Okay. Has anyone from the county ever contacted you to discuss anything related to this project, wetlands, delineation, categorization, mitigation, anything?
No.
To your knowledge, has anyone from the county been to the site to snoop around or to do any analyses or anything related to wetlands and mitigation?
None that I know.
Okay, so we just had the mitigation plan up there, and do you have any misgivings about the mitigation plan, or are you happy with it, or do you think it's going to work, or what's your analysis?
I don't have any misgivings. I really think it's a great plan. Some of the details we're doing, the details in it with the hydrology and everything, were with some discussions with a person from Ecology who's since retired. I'm actually kind of excited to see it designed and see how it works. They did it only once up in Sammamish, and so because sloped wetlands are a little interesting, so I'm actually kind of excited to see it built.
Okay, I noticed in your
September 23rd, 2024 letter to the county that you, you closed by saying that the mitigation plan is, quote, textbook. Is that, you stand by that?
Oh, yeah.
Do you see any development in the proposed setbacks or buffers?
No.
Okay, I just want to talk a little bit about the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers nationwide permit. Could you just kind of explain what that permit is and why it's needed and what it will allow if issued?
Well, it's needed, go way back from the Clean Water Act, I guess, because they regulate waters of the U.S. So it's usually quite a process because they have some pretty strict rules when discussions with the Army Corps of Engineers, so that seems to be quite a process. It usually takes several visits and that type of thing, but once you get there, it moves quite quickly, and they just issue the nationwide. There's monitoring always, and that's about it. Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, no, that's, so this is a federal jurisdiction matter.
It
is,
fair to yeah.
say? And if the permit's issued, it will allow for fill of the wetlands as proposed.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, so is there currently a nationwide permit pending for this project with the Corps?
Absolutely.
All right. Now, we've been saying that. That's good to confirm that's the case. And then what's the scope of the review? Is it really from A to Z, everything, from delineation through mitigation?
It is,
and
yes.
monitoring?
Yes.
They're concerned about the success of the mitigation, aren't they?
Yes.
Okay. And what other agencies, in this case, are the Corps and the State Department of Ecology working together for the review?
They are, because they at this in this one we need permitting from both of them, which is not always the case. But in this case, there's permits from both.
Okay, so they're kind of working
yeah.
hand in glove
mm-hmm.
for the review. And so mm-hmm. when you and Joanne are interacting with the Corps and Ecology, you're basically they're as one together.
All meetings include all of us, so that we hear everything that's going on. Yes.
Okay. And then what other agencies are involved in this nationwide permit process?
Anybody else who wants to come and join in the discussion would be.
what about Squamish Tribe, for instance?
The tribe never had any issues. They walked out with us. They never they walked out early on, and they said everything looked fine, and we never really had didn't need any further comment. So.
Okay, so the tribe was satisfied.
Okay,
what about Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife?
Yeah, they reviewed the typing of the stream. Yeah, again, they just. They were fine with everything and didn't have any more issues with it.
Okay. Has the county been involved in this Army Corps of Engineers nationwide permit mm-hmm. application?
I've not seen or them involved in any of it.
Okay. All right. And has there been a lot of interaction with the Corps and Ecology?
Yeah.
Okay. Like multiple site visits?
Yes.
Zoom calls, emails, et cetera, et cetera?
Yes.
Okay. Going back for more than a year?
Yes.
Can we call up exhibits B53 and B54, Liana? Oh, perfect. Okay. Yeah. So this is B53. So this. Could you blow it up a little bit, please? All right. Yeah, my eyes. That's perfect. Thanks. This looks. You could scroll down just a little bit or up, so I can see the header of the email. Thank you. Okay. So this is an email from Sarah Albright Garland at the Army Corps of Engineers. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And who is Sarah?
She's our lead at the Corps, yeah.
Okay, and this is dated January 30th, 2025. Okay, so looks like Ms. Albright Garland is summarizing a meeting that we had, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, and then if you could just scroll down just a little bit, Liana. So she's talking about mitigation calculations and then the feasibility of the proposed mitigation. You're doing the technical discussions about mitigation, is that fair to say?
Yes.
Okay, and then you could scroll down a little bit more, and then they're talking about the
performance standards and financial assurances, right, just to make sure the mitigation is going to work.
Correct.
Okay, and then the conservation easement, the Corps is concerned with, about the conservation easement, right? They want to see one put in place.
Of course.
Okay. Is that standard?
Yes.
Okay. All right, and then I see here there's a line that says wetland avoidance slash minimization. No further questions at this time on that topic. Okay, what does that mean to you?
That they're okay with moving forward with direct impacts to wetlands.
Okay, and are they looking at the same mitigation sequencing process that is in the Kitsap County Code?
Yes, they are.
Okay. And the Paulsboro Municipal Code?
Yes, they are.
Okay, and the Department of Ecology guidance?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, if we could just keep going down to the next exhibit, 54. Oh, I'm sorry. Could you go back up to the header of the 53? I just wanted to point something out. Okay. And so, so in the two line, there's myself and then there's Neil Molstad. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, who is Neil Molstad?
He's the lead at Ecology for our water certificate for the permit.
And he and Sarah have been the two ones working mm-hmm. together to spearhead this review?
Yes, they are.
Okay, and is Neil a wetland biologist?
Yes.
Okay.
He's a professional wetland scientist.
You worked with him before, I take it?
I did.
Okay, if you could now go down to 54, please. Okay, so here's just a little bit further. Okay, perfect. So here's the email again from Ms. Albright Garland, the Army Corps of Engineer project lead, and she's writing an email to Mr. Smith, I will represent. And if you could scroll down a little bit. Okay, so Mr. Smith requested an update. This is just a couple weeks ago, and this is her formal response. And so she's saying, we've completed our review of your wetland delineation report, dated November 7, 2024. I have no further comments on the report. What does that mean to you?
They're ready to proceed with approval.
Okay, and it looks like they've completed their review under the Endangered Species Act
mm-hmm.
and the National Historic Preservation Act.
Yes.
Is that standard procedure for a nationwide permit?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And then if you could scroll down a little bit. Yeah. Oops, maybe up a little bit more. Perfect. Okay, and then she says, we're reviewing your mitigation plan, right, as discussed. And they've been coordinating closely with Ecology, as discussed. And then they talk about this water quality certification and the coastal zone management federal consistency decision is required. Are you familiar with those?
I am, yeah.
Okay, and does the Corps need those certifications and other decisions in order to proceed with a nationwide permit?
No, they actually can be independent permits, but they work better together. I mean, they generally don't need both for project, but this time they do. So,
okay, we've been told that they need the water quality certification. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
For this project, yes.
For this project.
Sorry.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yes, this project.
Yes. Sorry.
All right. Okay. And then, if you could scroll down a little bit more. Oh, so right there. So the last sentence there: the Corps cannot finalize a permit decision until Ecology's individual water quality certification has been granted or waived. That's what you were just talking about.
Right.
Okay. All right. Let me see. Okay, hold on. Could scroll down just a little bit. Okay, I'm sorry. Let's go back up. I missed one thing that I wanted to point out. And let's go back up to 53. I think that's where it is. Oh, okay. Yes, I've mentioned this. So right before the wetland avoidance minimization comment, there's the sentence before says the proposed wetland mitigation areas have adequate perimeter buffers. Okay, what does that mean to you?
It means that the buffers meet the standards for that category rating of wetland.
Okay, so the 50-foot buffers we were looking at before in the mitigation plan, the blue and then the hatched pink with the indirect impacts, that's what she's talking about?
Yep. Okay.
All right. Okay, so I think you said this, but do you expect the Army Corps of Engineers to issue this permit once all the requisite things have happened?
I do.
Okay. And in your experience, would the Corps permit, Corps and Ecology permit review have gotten to this point if the Corps or Ecology believe that the project had probable significant adverse environmental impacts?
No.
Have you read the county's brief?
I have.
On this SEPA appeal?
I have.
Okay. Do you agree with the county's position that the indirect impacts are impermissible?
I do not agree.
Have you ever used indirect impacts before this project?
Yes, of course.
Is it common practice?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not an unusual thing.
No.
Okay, do you agree with the county's position on this appeal that the project has not adequately shown avoidance in the mitigation sequencing process?
I do not agree with that.
Okay, and why do you say that?
I wasn't at the throes of all the laying down all the projects and the whole development of it, but I know, I've seen enough developments like this to know that it's challenging to pull together these projects, and that this wetland and this property, the wetland's just an odd thing to squeeze in there, and I like just the design of it, and I think that you squeeze everything in that you possibly can to avoid. I think you've gotten a great project in the limited amount of net developable that was really available. So I would say yes, you've avoided quite well.
Okay. All right, let me.
And it's also, is that also what was used by the county? Is there?
Okay. So you've read the county's brief, you said, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And you saw the exhibits cited by the county, the two manuals?
Right.
Okay, we call those up. Let's go with.
The second one's good.
Okay, well.
The mitigation in Washington.
Okay. Well, let's just go to exhibit C2. Oh, okay. And then page 281. Sorry, gotta scrolling. So we're looking at the exhibit that the county put into the record. And are you familiar with this exhibit?
Yes.
Is it one that you use regularly?
Yes.
Okay. And we're going to page 281.
Manual.
Yeah. So C2. There's a C3. Yeah, we go to exhibit C2. I'm sorry. Yeah, 281. You're doing this faster than I would, so no question about it.
281 says, explains what direct impact is. And that's what the brief cites. And then it goes on to explain that.
Yeah, you got it there, 281, just to the top. Okay, so you see this here, Robin? It's talking about avoidance, is that correct?
Yes.
The first step in the mitigation sequence, and then avoidance of impacts means that there's no direct loss of wetland area and functions, right? So what's the difference between direct impact and indirect? What's direct?
Direct is like direct fill, so you lose like area.
Okay, you're actually turning it into uplands.
Correct.
Is that fair to say? Whereas indirect, it can remain a wetland, but it's being degraded in some way.
Correct.
Okay, all right. avoidance does not, however, eliminate indirect losses of wetland function. So is that to say that when you do indirect impacts, you're avoiding direct impacts? Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So now it gets back. Okay. So now you go to the second handbook that she included in her brief, page 129.
Okay. Okay, could you go to page 129 of I think it's C3. Although there, now let's see what.
You can go to the brief, too.
We're here.
Okay.
And then page 129. I think there's a problem with this exhibit. I think when it got scanned from what the county provided, it turned into something different. So I can share my screen from you know what I'm saying. I was up late last night trying to figure out what in the heck's going on. So let me do that. Yeah, here we go.
And Mr. Cody, we're kind of around break time. Is this a good time to
sure.
break or
yeah,
close
be
to being done? Or pardon?
I think we're close to being done. Maybe just finish up real quick and then.
Okay, sure. Yeah, we'll do that and then we'll do cross after the break. Okay. That sounds good.
Great. All right. Boy. Okay. All right. Close enough. All right. So this is exhibit. Exhibit C3. The county's exhibits C3. Oh, boy. Okay. So it is Wetland Mitigation, Washington State, Part 1, Agency Policies and Guidance, Washington Department of Ecology, Version 2, 2021. Are you familiar with this one?
First one or second one?
This one.
Mitigation.
No, I'm not sharing it.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, yeah. I'll get there. Are you familiar with this exhibit?
What year is it?
C3? 2021.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, is this one that you use?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what is it used for?
Guidance on mitigation design.
Okay. All right, and then I'm going to exhibit C3. Page 129. There it is. Okay, I'm sorry. So exhibit C3, and we're on page 147. Yeah, okay, and so it's talking about compensating for indirect impacts. Do you see that?
Yes.
Okay, and so you mentioned before those indirect impacts in the 50-foot buffer, wetland serving as buffer, that they had to be impacted for,
mm-hmm.
right? And they are, in fact, being impacted for.
Mm-hmm.
And you said 0.75. What was the ratio?
It's 0.75.
What does that mean?
So if you have for 0.7, one to.
So if you impact 1 acre of wetlands, you have to.
0.75.
Create?
Create, yeah.
Got it. Okay, so that's what.
Mr. Gorey, are you sharing screen or trying to?
Oh, my goodness. I forgot.
Yeah.
I said I was
going
to.
Yeah,
I didn't. Sorry. Here we go. I think that's it. And share. I hope I did that right.
Got it now, yeah. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, so we're just right at the top there, 6B47, and that's what we're talking about, mitigating for indirect impacts. And it says agencies typically require compensation at one half of the recommended ratio for permanent impacts. So is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
And so because the ratio would be 1.5, so one half of that is 0.75. Is that why we're at 0.75 for the indirect impacts?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And that's what you've done with the mitigation plan.
Right.
Okay. All right. Okay. I think we're good. No more questions from Ms. Myers.
Okay. Considering your other witnesses, Mr. Gorey, do you think we're going to finish by 5 today with all your witnesses, or should we start thinking about continuing this to another day?
Well, I fortunately, Ms. Bartlett has a medical appointment that she can't get out of.
Oh, okay. So you're saying you need another day anyway, regardless. Okay, that's good. We can I think when we get back, we'll go until we'll try around 4:30, and then we'll talk about scheduling for another day at that point. So
okay, yeah, and I don't know about cross examination, I know I'll cross examine the county's witnesses, so I don't think we're getting done today.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it doesn't sound like it. That's fine. All right. So let's take a break until 3:55. We'll see you at 5.
Recording stopped.